Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast for Harvey Norman, your cooling specialist with all the leading brands and products to help you beat the heat this summer.
Duck today's $3.05 million Cox Plate, Australia's premier weight for age race over 2,040 metres. Darrell Braithwaite's going to be performing. The horses I'm tipping. Better Loosen Up and David Hayes on track celebrating 25 years since their Cox Plate win. You can still get tickets available at the gate. And a man that's heading there, superstar from the Melbourne Storm and also a racehorse owner ambassador, is Billy Slater. G'day, Bill.
Yeah, morning, boys. Great day for racing. Just on my way to the track now. So,
fantastic day. Now, Bill, there's always the talk that before you played rugby league up there in Queensland, you're a track work jockey and, you know, you could have been Damien Oliver or Glenn Boss, et cetera, et cetera. Were you any good, Bill?
I was always too heavy.
Were you?
I don't know if I was any good, but I love the horses. I grew up with the horses. Played rugby league all my life and rode a bit of track work. I had a stint down in Sydney with Gay Waterhouse for 6 months, so that's well documented. And I just enjoy going to the races, seeing the horses. I enjoy all aspects of racing, actually, the breeding side of things as well.
Billy, how's the shoulder? I've got to ask you before we get onto the horses. Just got to see how the great man's travelling.
Yeah, the body's holding up pretty good. Had a few weeks off. I start training next week, actually, so I'm looking forward to getting in and doing a little bit of work and having a good pre-season and hopefully hitting 2016, you know, on a positive. So injury-free, hopefully.
What's more scary, running into a big forward or getting on a horse as a little jockey?
Probably running into a big forward. It's a great thrill and a great adrenaline to sit on the back of, you know, one of these animals travelling at 60, 70 kilometres an hour, and they've just got so much power underneath them, and it's a great thrill. But obviously running out and playing in front of some big crowds and some big games is an enormous adrenaline as well.
Have you ever fallen off one, Bill?
Plenty of times.
Have you?
Of course.
You just got to get back on, Howie.
Yeah, you got to get back on the horse, mate.
Oh, come
Haven't
on.
Haven't you heard the
I hope that wasn't your attempt at a joke, Bill, because that wasn't that flush.
Pardon the pun. Sorry, mate.
What are you expecting today? We spoke to a couple of people. We've the man that looks after the cleaner. We've heard from him. The boys from Maui that have got Mourinho. And you've got Aidan O'Brien. I've said throughout the show, Bill, it's the great thing about horse racing that you can be a battler or a billionaire, a sheik, et cetera, or a bloke from Northern Tassie. They can all have a crack. That's the thing I love about the sport.
It's great. It is unbelievable. And, you know, a lot of the strappers and workers around the stable, they come from bush backgrounds, and they come into the city, and, you know, they come to days like these, and it's a great industry. You look at the cleaner's story, you know, that's a great story in itself. And I think the overseas horses have dominated the staying races, and the way Aidan O'Brien's horse in Highland Reel won the Secretariat a couple of months ago, and that was the same track, the same lead-up race to Adelaide's Cox Plate win last year. So I'm sticking with that one. But in the big races, anything can win, and, you know, so many chances.
Well said, Billy. Hey, I've got to bring it up, buddy. I went to the prelim, watched the Storm go down to the Cowboys. Although, well done to the Cowboys, by the way, winning their first premiership. What went wrong, and how are we looking for
next
year?
What went wrong? Billy wasn't playing.
I know that. Clearly, that was a big out. But
Duck, it's we defended really well for a 6 week period leading into the finals and during the finals, and, you know, that just let us down at our defence. We didn't defend well in that prelim final, and that was the cornerstone of our performances leading into that game. So I think that's what it came down to. We let too many tries in, and before that, we were holding sides like the Roosters out and sides with a great attacking ability. But, it just wasn't our year this year. And Jonathan Thurston and the boys got their maiden trophy up there, which is great. I'm from North Queensland, and I've just actually come back from up there, and I know how much rugby league means to that community. And they've taken the trophy all around North Queensland, and they've had tens of thousands of people to come and see the trophy and the boys. So as disappointed as we weren't in the final, I was pretty happy for the community up there.
Yep. Yeah, it's great sentiments, Bill. From what I've been reading about rugby league, that Mal Meninga is in the picture to take over the Kangaroos job, which means there'll be a vacancy at the Maroons. I think Kevvy Walters' name has been thrown up there. It's a prestigious position, Bill.
Yeah, it is, and a tough one to fill. I don't know who'd want to take the job after Mel's just had a decade of dominance. Mm. So it's I'm not too sure, but there's going to be a few people that could do the job. I think obviously Kevin Walters has been in the system for a while. Darren Lockie is probably another one that hasn't been mentioned that, you know, probably could put his hand up and slot straight into the role. And, you know, at the moment, you know, we've got so many experienced players in the squad, it probably wouldn't be too hard. But I think in the next 5 years, when that transition of the Cam Smiths and the Jonathan Thurstons move on, that's going to be the tough period that we're going to have to transition into.
Bill Duck was giving me a few fashion tips for Derby, Jay. Just as we let you go, just take us through your ensemble today. What are we rolling?
I'm dressed in a nice Don Bagnato suit. So ching. I've got the ching ching. I've got the orange and white checkered shirt. Ooh. And I've got a nice navy blue suit with some white flowers on the tie. So
what colour shoe?
Look out. What colour? I've got the brown shoe on today.
Because if you'd said white, I was going to hang up on
you.
No.
The brown goes really nice. The brown goes nice with that orange.
Oh,
very
that's
nice.
It. Hey, Bill, we appreciate you having a chat. Have a wonderful day out of the Cox Plate today. You can still get tickets from the gate. Not that you'll need them. Have a great day out there, Bill.
No worries, boys. Thanks.
Duck last night at Manuka Oval in Canberra. The Prime Minister's 11 knocked up 307. Latham 131. Guptill 94. Peter Siddle got one for 53. And the Prime Minister's 11 were knocked over for 205. Bancroft failed with zero. Khawaja failed with one. Burns only got five. So they're the boys that could possibly be in the mix. Mm-hmm. All the discussion, though, was about the pink ball, which they're using for the first time for the day-night test. This is a little bit of what Adam Voges had to say after his innings of 55 about the ball.
Under lights particularly, the ball certainly swung for a lot longer. I don't know if you guys got to see it at the end there, but there wasn't much pink left on it by the end of the game. So we had it, the one that got hit on the roof and didn't come back was sort of 28 overs old, and it looked like it was 68 overs old. It looked as though the lacquer had come off basically, and it was turning green. There were bits of pink left, but there was probably more green than pink by the end.
Yeah, green ball could cause some concerns, I would have thought.
Not the best colour that you want coming down at you at 150 clicks.
Well, I hope they can get it sorted because I think it's the way forward for Test cricket to play night
but
Test cricket.
Never, ever have they, I know they've attempted, you know, the white balls, all sorts of stuff. It's never, ever worked.
Well, we've got a man on the
line.
We've
got scientists that cure everything and we can't get a bloody pink ball to stay pink.
Well, our next guest might be able to explain it to. He's not a scientist, but he bowls quick. His name is Peter Siddle. He's on the line now from Canberra. G'day, Sids.
Cheers, boys. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. A lot to talk about cricket-wise, but I guess the big talking point this morning, as it was always going to be, is the pink ball. How did it go coming out of your hand? And I see you had a hit as well. So you batted reasonably late in the inning, 17 off 25 and run out. So you saw both sides of it. What were your thoughts, Sids?
Yeah, it was my first chance to actually play with one. I haven't been a part of any of the trials the last couple of years. So it was, nice to get out there and have my first crack at it. I would have liked to have bowled second, I think, like Voges, he said that we didn't really get a lot happening through the air when we bowled, but that sort of twilight zone when they come out to bowl in the evening, it looked like there's a little bit more happening. So it would have been nice to have bowled second, I think.
How bad was the ball?
Yeah, I think it was just that, exactly what Voges said. It was just a bit hard to the pink sort of started to disappear quite quickly. Obviously, the Manuka pitch here is a bit more abrasive than most pitches going around. But that was the most disappointing thing. I think was just the ball and sort of changing colour, and it's a little bit hard to shine. It's not really like a traditional red ball where you can sort of buff it up and get it nice and shiny. You can't really do that with this ball.
See, it's easy for me to say that I'm excited about it because I think it's fantastic for Test cricket. As you know, we always love the Perth Test Duck because you can come home from work and still a session to watch. So I've got no doubt it's the way forward. How do you feel, Sids? And hopefully you'll be playing in that Adelaide Test. Are you a fan of moving into this type of day-night Test match?
To be honest, not really. I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I've always loved Test cricket for what it is and how it's played and all that type of thing. And I just feel there's too much change from the original. You're in your whites and you're playing for red ball, and that's throughout the day. You know, that's how it's always been, and that's why it's been so good. I guess it's hard to say at this stage. I've got another game, Shield game next week. The whole round is the day night with the pink ball, so all states get an opportunity before that first test coming up to have a crack at it again. And I think, after I've played a full four-day game where you get a good feel for it and how the match pans out, I think that's probably going to be the best time to judge properly.
So many variables in a game, though, Howie and Sids, where you've got a five-day game, toss of the coin, the wicket, we know all of those variables. So all of a sudden, if the ball, if you can't shine one side of the ball and you can't get it to go the way you wanted to get it, then it's ludicrous.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of thinking last night. I guess maybe the conditions here are a bit different. I guess maybe when we go to Melbourne or if you play it at the Gabba and stuff like that, that the ball might hold up a bit better and you can get something out of it. But obviously on a Marnika pitch set out for one-day cricket, it's going to be a lot drier. So it's probably not the best judge at this stage. But, yeah, I'm with that. I think, you know, you like to be able to toss the coin and you pick what you do, but normally you'd bat first. But you might only want to bat for 60 overs and declare in the evening and have a crack then when the ball's hooping around. So to have a factor like that in the game, I think, could make it quite hard.
It's going to be interesting. Peter Siddle's going to stick around and talk all things cricket on the Dead Set Legends on Triple M. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Wayne Carey. Duck, we've had Peter Siddle on the line giving his thoughts. Not a massive wrap for the pink ball in the day-night test match. But, Sids, the fact you were playing in the PM's 11 yesterday was the fact that you couldn't get a run for the Bush Rangers, who got rolled. By gee, no Siddle in a side for Victoria, I find a little bit unusual.
What's going on there?
Well, it must have been a bit of a shock to you, Sids, in some ways. And I noticed, boof, the Australian coach said, well, get Siddle in there, he should be playing.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. I think, yeah, my lack of white ball cricket over the past couple of years sort of left me stranded. The cancellation of the Bangladesh tour, sort of, I'd been preparing for red ball and getting ready like that. So it's a little bit of unlucky at the timing of everything, I think. And but it was nice to get down here to Canberra and play in the PM's 11 and have a run. It's been a while.
Sid, you're back in the team. You obviously played the last test in England, and you're back. Like you said, it's been a tough run. How do you overcome all of that mentally?
Yeah, it's been hard work, I guess. But I think at the end of the day, as a young kid, I dreamt of playing for Australia. So that's pretty easy to keep working towards and keep striving for. So it's just a matter of working hard off the field and doing everything I can to make sure I'm prepared and ready to go when that opportunity comes. And I think England was the best example of that. But I'd been out of the side for 4 months and hadn't had an opportunity, but when I got that chance, I was fully prepared. I knew what was coming up, and I went out there and performed well.
Pete, there was a idea put out in the media. Now, whether it was true or not, was that the coaching staff wanted bowlers to be able to bowl faster than 140 kilometres an hour, and that was maybe why you were out of the side. I go back and look at Glenn McGrath, who bowled at
132, 133,
and it seemed to work out for him. Was that the story that you were given, is that you dropped off in pace and that's why you weren't in the side?
Yeah, that was a story at first, but I guess that when you get replaced with Josh Hazlewood, who actually bowls the same pace anyway, it sort of doesn't even out. So I guess it's just a matter of it's just sticking to what I do best, and that's what's worked. If you look at the last couple of successful series that we've had, has been building pressure, patience, and being consistent, and I think that's what worked when we won 5-0 against England. It's what's worked overseas at other times. And I think, we can't go away from that. We can't forget about that, because it is a big part. And Glenn McGrath's the perfect example. He hasn't taken that many wickets for no reason. And that was his main goal.
Keep putting on the spot, Sids. They can't leave you out. But I want to turn to the Kangaroos. I know you're a Kangaroo man. How do you think we went this season? Obviously, a preliminary final again. But do you think we went forward?
I think so, a little bit. I think so. I think our performance in this prelim was a lot better than our previous one up in Sydney, which was disappointing. But yeah, the boys, I think, it's hard work coming from outside the four. I think that either getting that rest, especially when you're not quite as experienced as a Hawthorn, who got plenty of finals experience, it makes it a hard work. So I think the boys will be a lot better for it next year. And hopefully, finishing that top four and give ourselves the best chance.
Sids, as we let you go, who do you play for next? Where's your next game of cricket leading into the Test Series?
Actually, playing in Canberra again. We've got a CA11 game, just a two-day game. So, day game with the red ball against New Zealand starting today. So, have a hit out here just for a couple of days and then get back to Melbourne to start the Shield season, which all states start on Wednesday. So, looking forward to that.
And we see you in the Big Bash again this summer?
Yeah, back to the Renegades. Yep, signed on there for a couple more years. So
with Chris Gale.
It's always good fun. Yep, Chris Gale and Bravo. So
what are those boys going to bring to the table?
Indian rock star. I think they'll bring plenty of fun and enjoyment around the nightlife. That's for sure.
That's one way of putting it. Hey, Pete, we are massive supporters of you on this show. Best of luck. We hope to see you playing in the first test, and may it all go well looking into the summer ahead for the Australian cricket team.
Cheers, boys. Take care.
Peter Siddle on the line. I'm pretty honest about the ball and selection issues, Dave.
Absolutely. He's a gun. He should be in the Australian side every week.
There you go. Wayne Carey's told you. The Dead Set Legends, Triple M. Duck, massive day today at the Valley, Moonee Valley, the Cox Plate, and a couple of ripping stories. One is the Tasmanian that's rolling out the cleaner for the second year in a row.
Yep.
But the second is a couple of brothers, the Galagotis brothers, Manny and Peter, the trainer of Mourinho, which is a big chance today in the Cox Plate. And we've got Manny on the line. Good morning, Manny.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Oh, very fantastic.
Well.
Cox Plate morning.
How are you?
Yeah, how are you, Manny?
Buzzing. Been really good. Actually, it's been a really good build-up. It's been really smooth this week. A lot of, obviously, media attention. But more importantly, the horse is in great order, which has really helped the week go really smooth.
How do you keep that in check? Because clearly, obviously, a lot more media around. Have you changed things? Training schedule changed? Have you done anything different with the horse?
No, pretty much tried to absorb a lot of the media pressure for Pete and make sure that he focuses on the job in hand. And that's how the structure works really well that way. So I've been in Melbourne the last couple of days and doing a lot of functions and things like that, which is really good. And the horse is tucked away back home in the country area, and he doesn't know what's going on, thankfully, but he will when he gets to the Valley. He'll be waking up, I'm sure.
Now, Duck, I went to high school and I lived in Traralgon near Mowi, and I went for Mowi for one night out once to see a mob called Frente, and they had one song called Accidentally Kelly Street. It was the most frightening night of my life in Mowi. Have things changed at all in Mowi, Manny, in the last 15
it's a great,
years?
No, it's a misconceived perception. It's a great little country town. Like most places, there's a little bit of a little bit of stuff that goes on that shouldn't, but I've sort of lived there most of my life, and there's some great stories to come out of the town, and it's a great little town, and I'm sure that it's going to be on the map today for the right reasons.
Hey, I've read your interview that you did with the ABC, and obviously chicken shop owner back home, and I love the fact that you said you're not overawed by the situation. I'm always fascinated to know about the horse, and you obviously know the horse back to front. Do you feel that he knows or senses the occasion?
Absolutely. Wayne, it's no different. My background is that I played in the National Soccer League, and you try and absorb the sporting pressure in the moment, and you can only do that with experience. And yep. Peter and I have a sporting background, and pretty much to us it's a sport. So I've always wanted to sort of understand and feel what it would be like to run out in front of 100,000 at the G or anything like that. And, today is our time in the sun. And we're definitely, the racing aspect of it is the variable that sort of hurts the most because you can't actually control it yourself. So we're going to present a horse from a training perspective to sort of walk through that tunnel. And then it's up to our rider and basically the luck in running to determine the right result. But this particular horse is in great form, and the horse himself, he's a showman, and just the difference between sort of good horses and bad horses, they actually know what's going on, and he's an absolute champion. And the race is just intriguing. It's just such a good race. And I think I was at a function yesterday, I sort of said to a few people, I think if you run this race 10 times, there'll be probably 10 different winners,
Yep.
Manny, one of the great things about racing is anybody can beat anybody. And obviously a couple of brothers from Mowi, as you would have heard all week, are up against the likes of Aidan O'Brien, who's out there at Coolmore in Ireland, which is just an unbelievable setup. It's a great thing about racing, isn't it, that you both can compete on a level playing field against some very, very wealthy, well-known people.
Absolutely. And, Pete's been doing it for a fair while now, especially the last 4 or 5 years. We've actually had an exceptional record, and he's the champion trainer that side of Melbourne. In fact, last night he got his sort of eighth premiership in a row, and Mourinho was sort of crowned the horse of the year up in Gippsland, which is great. And I guess really this is the pinnacle. It's just like you work your way through the processes, and you sort of get to a level where we're in the best race in Australasia today with a horse that's got a lot of capabilities, and it's a dream come true to be sort of walking into Moonee Valley today and taking on the Sheiks and Aidan O'Brien and David Hayes and Chris Waller, all great people. But the as you said before, boys, the race carries some amazing stories, like Mickey Burles and the Tassie horse and obviously ourselves and Paul Bashara, Happy Trails, and even Lord Williams' horse Faulkner. I think collectively those four horses cost about 150 grand, not even that, and they've won nearly $7 or $8 million. It's unbelievable. So, it's a great buzz. I'm sort of been really cool, but now there's been a lot of messages coming through and a lot of things happening this morning. And, it's just going to be a great day. I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm hoping the horse won't let us down.
And if you get the winners, we'll let you go. Manny, is it free chickens for everyone in Maui, or what's the story?
Well, we're gonna stay in town. I think one of the last times I sort of met Wayne was at a function at the Long Room there, and
was I being hafe?
One of our mutual mates, Greg Cahan, had a big night there one night, and we're sort of heading to the Long Room tonight, and hopefully we can. I think we're celebrating already. It's just a privilege to be in the race, and I think that's a great achievement in itself. And
absolutely.
And hopefully the horse, if he just has a little bit of luck in running and can run really well, I think it's just going to top off a great day. So looking forward to it.
Well,
great
work. We're on. So I hope that doesn't slow your horse down. Manny, to you and Pete, have a wonderful, wonderful day. And hopefully it's a big celebration tonight in Melbourne, and then you can take the Cox Plate to Maui tomorrow. That'll be wonderful.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
That is Mourinho running in the Cox Plate today with Manny and Peter Galagardos on the Dead Set Legends.
Only paid 36 grand for it.
36 grand.
Yeah.
Which is not much if it wins a Cox Plate.
Exactly right. And a Group 1 last week. So going very well, Howie.
Yeah, it's a lot, though, if it doesn't do anything. So she's a risky caper, ducky boy. Dead Set Legends, Triple M. Now, story during the week about Jake Carlisle. I don't give my opinion about football much on the show. I will in a moment. But this is Jake arriving at the airport speaking to Channel 7 News last night.
Yeah, obviously I put out a statement already. A little bit embarrassed. I'm truly sorry for what's happened. I'm looking forward to getting to the Saints and try and prove myself in a new club.
Now, ducky boy, it's not my go to sit on a high horse and say this is right, this is wrong, and it never has been. And the drugs issue are complete aside. Obviously, it's a problem in our society, and like it or not, Jake's not the only footballer that will have been doing that over the off-season. Not that that's any reason to be doing it. But, duck, to film yourself on a phone and send it to a so-called mate to say, look at me in Vegas.
It is.
Especially with everything that happened already with Harley Bunnell this year. How dumb can you be, duck?
That's as dumb as it gets.
That is dumb and dumber and possibly a little bit dumber.
And picking your mates, because apparently there was another video going around that another mate of his is shopping around for money, so clearly not hanging around the right people, or certainly people that they're certainly not his mates, that's for sure.
Just beggars belief. Now, I've got a question for you, ducky boy. It's been reported in the media, and whether that is actually the case or not, but it's been reported that Jake's manager...
Which paper?
The Herald Sun, ducky.
Oh, yeah, believe that.
Okay. It's been reported that Jake's manager, I find this really interesting, that Jake's manager knew there was an issue on the way, whether he knew the specifics of it or not.
I'll tell you what, Howie.
Hang on. I put to you, is it the manager's responsibility in that situation to look after his player or go to the football club that is about to draft that man, i.e. St Kilda, and tell them, listen, before you draft him, I'm just letting you know there's an issue coming?
No. His job is to look after the player. And I put to you, Howie, that there's been a lot of talk about, whether the manager should approach the footy club, whether the manager should get on the front foot. There's no right or wrong way in this situation. And unfortunately, with the saturation of the media and how certain things are reported and sometimes not always the truth, is that, sometimes saying nothing and just sitting back and letting it unfold, especially when there's things such as video and we've got video and we've got this and we've got that, the more you talk about it, the more fuel you add to the fire.
You know what? I could not disagree with you more.
Okay. Well, and you know what? That's
yeah, absolutely. Which is, I reckon the manager in that situation, I spoke to a leading player manager this week at a function and put this very question to him. And he made complete sense when he said to me, if I didn't go and tell the football club that this was going to occur, every deal I did with every player from there on in, I would lose trust with every football club in the competition because I didn't inform them as to the full information.
It just depends, Howie, because you don't know exactly what the manager knew. You don't know whether...
No, you don't.
Sometimes
no, absolutely
when, yeah, that's
you don't.
Right. So when things and rumours and innuendo and they say, we've got a video, we've got this, and they say, okay, well, give us a look at it. And they say, no, this is, but we're running with this tonight on Current Affair or whatever. having had a little bit of experience in this area, Howie, where all this sorts of stuff, I don't care what manager out there thinks they know what they should or shouldn't do. Until you're in it, until you're in the storm, you can't make comment. It's a bit like me making comment on a coach, coaching a football team. I haven't coached, so you can have an opinion, but with certain aspects of how you coach, I can't. I can't seriously.
You can still have an opinion about it, though.
Well, you can, but it's not probably the right one.
So what does Jake do from here? Imagine going into
There's only one thing Jake can do from here. Only one thing. And that is, you know what? Head down, bottom up, train his absolute, you know what, off, and come out there and play really good footy for St Kilda. That's the only thing he can do.
Should the Saints in any way take games off him? Should they penalise him? There's discussion in the media today about whether their contract could be altered as a result of what's happened. Okay, you're the Saints leadership group. Jake
I've seen the pictures. So I don't. He hasn't admitted to do anything wrong, although the pictures tell 1,000 words.
Reasonably damning, I would say.
I would think so. But his job, I think the biggest thing for him is to walk in, obviously, to the leadership of St Kilda. But they will be really hard on him now. It'll be hard for him not only now to play good footy, but it'll be hard on him to walk into a new club and to get along with a group of players that sometimes is quite daunting. It's like starting a new high school.
Mm.
And he's got the work to do. If he trains really hard and then comes out and plays some really good footy, then he will be forgiven.
And forgotten by round 10.
That's right.
Does he play round one? If you're on the St Kilda leadership group, does Jake Carlisle play round one for the Saints?
I would think so.
Okay. Manny Galagotis, trainer of Mourinho, joins us next. Bit of a fiery start to the whole show today. Like it, Ducky.
I like it when geeks disagree with me.
Oh, I like it when I give an opinion and you just completely discount it. Triple M. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard, Wayne Carey. Duck, time to speak to our man Greg Russ for all the latest thanks to Infinity Cars Brighton, designed to inspire, engineered to excite. He dominated at Bathurst, then he was on fire at Phillip Island where you were last week.
Absolutely. Rusty, I've got to say, first MotoGP, absolutely loved it. Could not get over the speed of the bikes.
And Duck, you were treated to one of the great races of all time, mate. I mean, most of the experts reckon in the past decade, certainly at Phillip Island, you would have seen nothing better. To see those four guys going at it wheel to wheel for the entire Grand Prix was just awesome.
And perfect day too. It was just beautiful.
And they're back in business in Malaysia tomorrow. You can see that on Network 10 tomorrow, Arvo. Now, Rusty, you're up at the V8s at the moment. Some interesting news overnight. I saw that Moffat had the quickest time, but I also read that Dave Reynolds is concerned he's not going to get a drive next year. This is a man that was on pole for Bathurst. What's happening, Rusty?
This is unbelievable. So when the game of musical chairs stops, a few people are worried that he may not end up with a full-time seat. So James Moffat yesterday, quickest in practice here on the streets of the Gold Coast. He's announced that he's leaving Nissan. He hasn't confirmed where he's going, but most people believe he'll take the second seat at Volvo because David Wallace confirmed he'll be leaving and maybe just doing some part-time enduro drives. Then overnight, but in the space of about an hour of practice finishing here at the Gold Coast, we learned that Will Davison is pulling up stumps on his contract early at Erebus, and he's going to go and play in the Techno team, which is the Darrell Lee car that currently runs Shane Van Gisbergen. So what was meant to be a quiet off-season in terms of driver movement has turned out to be quite a busy one so far, guys.
With the greatest possible respect with the Erebus team, that didn't surprise me, Rusty. Will is a wonderful driver, probably, for mine, the best five drivers in the category. He didn't have the machinery, and you can only do that for so long before you start looking elsewhere. It wasn't a great surprise to me, that one.
It was a toughie because he obviously won that race in Perth earlier in the year, Harry. That was a very emotional thing for that team who've battled away. He's obviously sat down, looked at the landscape and figured that car that Shane is in. I mean, it was on pole at Bathurst last year. Van Gisbergen's been enormously quick in it. He obviously feels career-wise that that's the right way to go.
Now, Rusty, Cyclone Patricia is centred on Mexico, but causing some havoc in Texas for the weekend of F1.
Mm. Yeah, and Duck, for the first time since 2004, they've actually been forced to cancel a practice session. So practice two was abandoned because the rain up in Texas has been torrential. Nico Rosberg was fastest in a wet session one from the two Red Bulls, and Dan Ricciardo ended up with the third quickest time. Now, they still haven't resolved that whole engine thing for Red Bull for next year, what they're going to do. And some talk today that they may use the same power plants that McLaren use, and maybe Honda engines next year for those guys.
Yeah, it's going to hit the Pacific coast of Mexico, which is a magnificent part of the world. Fingers crossed to everyone, if anyone in here has got any relatives in that part of the world, because, Duck, they're talking 30-metre waves, cyclonic winds. They're calling it the perfect storm and not in a good way. So hopefully everyone's okay. Talking about Texas, Lewis Hamilton could win his third Drivers' World Championship, which puts him in truly, truly elite category, Rusty. Where do you rate him in the scheme of things? You've seen a lot.
It's interesting. I mean, he's won the one last year, and then, you know, potentially this year's one. I mean, it's largely been a battle with his teammates. If you look back on history, there was some, you know, some classic stuff for Ayrton Senna and you know, a very different era for those guys. Remove the rock star aspect. Not everyone loves that about Hamilton.
He is
a special driver, guys. I mean, he's to win a third world championship and put him up alongside his great hero, Ayrton Senna, would be a massive thing if he can do it.
Now, it sounded to me you didn't like the rock star thing. Rusty, what would you prefer? Would you prefer your mate Kimi or Sebastian Vettel or Michael Schumacher, who were wonderful athletes, but I'm not sure they exactly push their sport forward, where this man, he gets out there, he entertains, he brings people that might not be interested in Formula One to the table, Rusty?
No, I'm with you. You know, you need to push beyond the motor racing boundaries, Howie. Probably the only thing I wince at times is when he, you know, pushes the boundary with rules like, you know, he did at Wimbledon this year by not turning up in the right attire. I mean, there are just moments where, you know, if you're walking in to the members' stand at a cricket match or something like that, you do the right respectful thing. Just because you've got that rock star character or quality about you, yes, do that, but let's be reasonable at times too.
So, Rusty, you're telling me we're at Derby Day next week doing the Dead Set Legends. I can't be wearing the thongs next week. Is that
what
you're telling
me? Don't run the Okanuis like normal, mate. No.
All right, horse. You've been on fire. Have a great call up there on the Gold Coast.
Looking forward to it. Cheers, boys. Thank you.
Duck, there's a lot of people excited in Melbourne about an event taking place at Etihad this evening. Speedway, 4,500 tonnes of dirt have been brought into Etihad. If you've seen the pictures, it looks amazing.
Oh, it does. And I'll tell you what, this is the one thing, and we say it every week, Howie. We cover all sports. The Melbourne sports fraternity just get behind. They had 5,000 people at the practice session.
At practice. Extraordinary. And a man joins us on the line, a 2012 World Speedway champion, a good Aussie lad by the name of Chris Holder. G'day, Chris.
How you going, boys?
Yeah, we're fantastic. As Duck pointed out, 5,000 there yesterday, just for you blokes to get things sort of rolling and practicing. It's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it is, mate. Normally, we're lucky to get 50 people in for a practice. But, yeah, that 5,000 Aussies turn up and cheer us on just to go around and do a bit of practice was pretty cool. So it's looking good for tonight.
How's the track come up? Because, obviously, you ride all around the world. And as Howie just said, they just dump a heap of dirt in the middle of Etihad Stadium. Do they differ much, the tracks?
Yeah, they do. The indoor ones like we have tonight, we do about four of them a year, and they're mainly on a bit smaller track. It's like 270 metres around like the inside line, but this one's 346, so this is quite a big one for us, and you know, we prefer it like this for sure. It's just the temporary ones normally rip up a bit and create a bit of action, so we'll see what happens tonight, but it was looking good yesterday, so the racing should be really good.
So when it's not so tight, you got a little bit more room. You probably, it helps when you haven't got brakes. I couldn't believe when I found out that you actually don't have brakes.
Yeah, that's it. What do you need brakes for, mate?
How do you stop?
That's the obvious question.
You just shut off and just roll to a stop.
Oh, good luck with that. There's a couple of big fences that Eddie had. I'm not sure if you're aware, Chris. Looking at where you travel around the world, Duck, we need to join this tour. Poland, Finland, the Czech Republic, the UK, Latvia, Sweden, Denmark, Slovenia. By gee, you get to some wonderful venues. This is the dream tour, Chris.
Yeah, we go. We're pretty lucky that way. We get to travel around a fair bit and go to some pretty cool towns that you probably never go to if you didn't ride in the Speedway Grand Prix anyway. So, yeah, it's good to come home to Melbourne anyway, and we haven't had a round in Australia since 2002, so we're pretty excited for this one.
How do you get involved in a sport like this? It's obviously from a young kid, you love motorbikes. You know, how does it all start?
Yeah, pretty much. Started off, you know, three or four racing, motocross bikes and stuff like that, and then my old man he was into Speedway and had a couple of friends who were into it, and then we're from Sydney, so we were up the Central Coast riding and just through friends and family, really. And then when if you're good enough, you can make a bit of a go of it overseas in Europe. So, and I've been lucky enough to be over there for the last sort of 10 years. So it's been a good run.
This is going to be a fantastic event tonight. I'm sliding along to have a look at this, Duck, just out of interest. Ticketmaster.
Just out of interest?
Just out of interest. Get down and have a look. Ticketmaster, you can get your tickets now and very reasonably priced as well, I must say. Chris, without giving away state secrets, how much sort of does one make if you're a World Speedway champion? Is this sort of $100,000 a year or $1 million sort of dollars a year type territory?
Millions? Nah, I wish it wasn't. I wish it wasn't millions. Not even 100, I don't think.
Right.
But we race a lot, not just the Grand Prix. We race in like a British league, Swedish, and the Polish league through the week. So we're doing four meetings a week in them three countries. So
wow.
It's quite a strain on, like we do from I think March to October. Couldn't get up to about 120 meetings a year. So
crikey. Chris, a good friend of mine is a comedian, and he has girls follow him after a show. And in their comedic caper duck, they call them jokies.
Jokies.
Jokies rather than groupies. Is there a similar setup with Speedway, Christopher?
Yeah, there's plenty of them.
Is there? Do you have a name for them?
Yeah, groupies, I suppose, okay. Is a good one for them.
All right.
But no, about them, we don't have the support and stuff that we have, so it's really cool. And yeah, we're looking forward to tonight. It should be good.
I tell you what, as soon as you said that, Duck straight onto the Ticketmaster hotline. He's trying to get himself along. Chris, best of luck tonight. Really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a wonderful event in Melbourne. Hopefully there's a big crowd.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks very much, fellas.
Yeah, great to speak to Chris Holder, the World Speedway tonight. Something different, Duck.
It is. And once again, I said it before, but the Melbourne people just love their sport. Doesn't matter what it is.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Wayne Carey. Duck, our next guest involves one of the most intriguing and potentially entertaining...
What was that?
Well, I just thought you were losing focus. You were watching the television and we're about to get a wonderful guest on who, as I said, he's been involved in one of the most intriguing and yet amazing sports story of the year. Her name is Ash Barty, professional tennis player turning to professional cricket. She's a lovely young lady. She joins us on the line now. G'day, Ash.
G'day, boys. How are you going?
Yeah, we're fantastic. Hey, congratulations on this bold move. I guess the first obvious question is, you won Wimbledon Juniors at 15, played in doubles finals at the French, the US Open with Casey and the Australian Open, and you've decided to ease back on tennis for a period of time. Why?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple at the end of the day. I just wanted to come home and spend a bit more time with my family. Tennis has been such a big part of my life since I was young. I mean, I started playing when I was 5 years old, so, you know, it's been a long journey and I loved every second of it, but I just needed to sort of take some time to step back and, you know, just be a normal kid again.
Ash, so many kids do exactly that. You do start tennis so young and then you get to a professional stage and you've almost had a whole career by the time you get to there. So, case of a little bit of burnout?
No, in my case, no, I don't think so. I've always wanted to have a long career and have a successful one, but for me it was just I didn't want to at the end of the day be driven away from the sport, and I think it was the right time for me to step back and just come and enjoy a few months and now 12 months but with my family and go through some experiences with them. And I know my sisters had some big changes going on in their lifestyle and to make sure I was here, and they encouraged me so much throughout my journey, and I just wanted to make sure I could be here for them when they needed me.
Ash, congratulations in so many ways, because it's a really courageous decision. Obviously, you're earning good money, $500,000 a year on the tennis tour, and that was only going to go up. But now, cricket, what were you just having a hit in the backyard one day and thought, wow, I can do this too? Or how did it come to pass? Because you're now in the squad for the Brisbane Heat, which will play in the Women's Big Bash League, which will be on Network 10 this year. So it's fantastic, Ash.
Yeah, thank you. No, it sort of erupted from nothing, really. I went and saw the Southern Stars girls before they went over to the UK for their Ashes series, and sort of went over to dinner with them and had a pretty casual chat. And you know, at the end of the night, I just got chatting with Matthew Mott, and you know, we just sort of, he was asking me whether I'd really played much before, and I sort of said, well, no, Motty, I hadn't. I just mucked around in the backyard, and he said, oh, we have to come to a training session one time, and just before the girls were going away, so he contacted Andy Richards, the coach of the Fire and the Heat as well. And I went along to one of the sessions, and I mean, we're still going back 3 months later.
So what do you do, Ash? Bat, bowl?
A bit of both. Yeah, I don't mind a dabble in everything, really. I just love to get out there with the girls and try and contribute as much as I can to the team.
So what is required now for you to get a start in the actual Brisbane Heat starting 11, Ash?
Yeah, well, that's the goal. And, you know, hopefully I can just keep trying to to learn the very basics, especially on the competitive side. You know, we've been training and in the nets and been doing pretty well in there. So now it's time to try and transfer that across to when we're actually playing club games with when we're playing against the other girls. And it's great. We get a chance to play against the other Squad Fire girls during our club games. So that's a really good experience. And, you know, I just got to relax and go out there and try and hit it.
Ash, you've made the decision purely for yourself, which is the only way you can make a decision. As I said, I think it's fantastic. How's it been received out there and you in the general public? Because people will say, wow, she's a superstar tennis player. Why give it away? How's it been received?
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't actually looked much into it. I knew for me it was the right decision. And at the end of the day, that's all I really cared about, to be honest. I just wanted to do what was right for me. And, you know, people are going to think, whatever they want, regardless of what's said and what's come out. So, you know, I'm happy doing my own thing, and I've had a fabulous year. Really enjoyed being at home, and, you know, met some great new people, obviously through cricket and a lot of the girls, and, you know, it's just been an amazing experience.
Any chance you come back to tennis in the future, Ash?
I haven't closed any doors at all. I'm still involved in tennis almost every day. At the moment, just coming home from coaching this morning, so... You know, it's been great, and I'm still on court coaching with the kids and love it. You know, tennis is my biggest passion. I think it always will be. It's been a part of my life since I was five, so I can't really get rid of it. But, no, I haven't closed any doors, and you never know. I might be back on tour in a few years' time.
Hey, Ash, it sounds like you're really excited to be involved in a team sport. Obviously, tennis is such an individual sport, but you're excited to do exactly that.
Absolutely, yeah. It's sort of my first taste of team sport ever. I never really got a chance to play it while I was at school. To be honest, I wasn't at school much. But no, I never really got a chance to play it. And this has just been a phenomenal experience. The girls welcomed me in from day dot just with open arms and made me feel really comfortable. And I think that's why the transition's been so easy for me. And it's a great group of girls in both the Fire and the Heat squads. They're just amazing. And yeah, it just makes it so easy to get up and go to training with them. It just, the atmosphere is unreal.
Ash, as we let you go, obviously golf at the Olympics in 2016 for the first time. Maybe just slide down to your local golf course, the Savo, and you might be able to qualify by January.
Well, I started playing golf a few months ago, sort of. I haven't played for the last couple of months, been a bit busy. But, no, I played and got my handicap. And, yeah, I think a few jaws dropped when I hit that first ball for the first time as well.
What's the handicap?
Well, considering I never... you know, my dad used to play at a very high level. I'd never had a lesson or anything. At the moment, sitting at 11.
We've had enough of you. We've had enough of you, Ash, to be honest. We've had enough talking to you. Congratulations, as I said, on what I think is a wonderfully courageous decision. And hopefully we see you performing well for the Brisbane Heat. And whatever your dreams, I hope they'll come true, Ash, because you've got a wonderful, well, positive attitude. It's great to have a chat with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ash Barty, switching from tennis to cricket, and maybe having us off 11.
Ah, she's a gun.
That's extraordinary. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Wayne Carey. Peter Siddle to join us after 11 o'clock. Billy Slater.
What about the Hife?
What about him?
Yeah. We have a bit of a chat in the break. Mm. And he's sitting here. We're talking about Derby Day, which...
We're broadcasting from the Birdcage next week.
And cannot wait, Howie. And the Hife here just playing the victim. Just saying,
I'll be back in the studio.
You won't come and talk to me. Yeah. Well, if you wear a proper suit,
it's all
Hife,
true. You won't speak to me.
No, we will. We'll look after you, Hife.
We'll look after you.
Talking about Derby Day, it's the 9-year anniversary of when Erica and I first went out officially at Derby
on
Day 9 years
Derby
ago.
Derby Day. So that's
9 years
anniversary.
Ago, yeah, her life went through the roof this time 9 years ago. And I was telling the big penguin, my 3-year-old, that... Dad and Mum were going to Derby Day and he was going to have to go and stay with his grandparents. And he was happy with that. And then he said, oh, Dad, do you have to take your own sausages? And I was like, well, I'd have to take sausages, mate. And he's like, and then he said, oh, do you have to take your own steak? And I said, mate, yeah. And then he said to me, do you have to take your own Barbie? I said, what are you talking about? He said, oh, Barbie Day.
Oh, Derby Day.
Thought we were going for Barbie Day.
Well,
the big
a lot of
penguin.
People do take the Barbies the out in the car park. That's probably... your usual setup, Howie.
Well, we're birdcage this time. So, you know, suits and ties, not my go, Duck, as you know. Right. It's not where I feel my most comfortable. I'm more your thong and board shorts man, but you've got to do what you've got to do. I come to you for advice.
Okay, well, it's pretty Derby Day's actually.
Hang on. I come to you for fashion advice. Let me just get that in there straight away. Fashion advice for Barbie Day.
Well, Derby Day's easy one. Now, the Hife over here who we're discussing... He's talking about having, you know, different hankies, don't have the hanky matching with the tie. Well, it's pretty simple, Derby Day. It's black and white.
Black and white.
Derby Day is traditionally black and white, so you could keep it. You can keep it pretty simple.
As in the same suit that I didn't give back to Channel 10 from the Logies, that black suit. I can roll that one out again.
No, you can go a little bit more trendy. Go a sharp black, but fitted, Howie. You've got the rig to wear a fitted suit, so you don't want to wear a loose, fitting
not off the rack
suit,
type scenario,
hanging off you like a cheap suit. You just want to go a nice fitted suit. Always crisp white shirt. Crisp.
A white shirt.
White shirt. And just your nice skinny black tie is easy.
So it's, I'm dressing as if I'm going to a funeral.
No. Well, like I said, Derby Day is traditionally black and white. A lot of girls will have black and white check dresses on and, you know, black headpieces, white headpieces, okay, all that sort of stuff.
What about a tie? I have to wear one?
Have to wear a tie in the birdcage, yes.
And the old pocket square that the Hife was banging
pocket
on
square,
about, that I see there in at the moment.
Well, you know what? That's probably something if you wanted to be out there. Don't get me wrong, there'll be plenty of people there in colour and everything else. But if you don't want to stand out, so I'll be going in traditional black and white. I don't like to stand out too much.
Sure you don't, Guru.
It happens naturally.
You're a knob. You are a genuine knob, right? Of the highest order.
I would,
your daughter's in here. Listen, she's in grade four.
What I would do is I would go the black and white. And if Erica, this is what I would do, and it might be a bit.
Oh, Erica's got a new outfit.
It might be a bit tacky or a bit cheesy.
Right.
But so the black and white, whatever colour dress Erica has on.
Right.
Just the top of your hanky just hanging out, to compliment Erica's lovely
dress. Anyone's out there and wants to sort me out a suit, by the way, for Barbie Day, I'll be more than happy to answer your phone call.
Peter Jackson probably would.
Well, they can give me a call. Shoes. Now, I've got your sort of standard black shoe, and then I've got your patent leather high shine. Can I roll those on?
There is
Barbie
only
Day?
One type of shoe that you have to get, right, and that is Aquila.
Oh, hang on.
Aquila shoes. No, I'm being serious. Okay. Aquila shoes, they have... I'm not into the really shiny black shoe, but just something neat and tidy, Howie. Not too, like I said, you're not trying to draw attention to yourself. You just want to be
low key,
crisp.
Is it a touch unfair that the girls can have a beautiful choice of all these magnificent frocks and blokes just have to wear a suit and a tie?
We are very limited. We are very limited. Clearly, you know, when on the other days, Howie, you can have a little bit more colour and your ties and your handkerchiefs and all of those different things. But generally, Derby Day is black and white.
Sunnies, yes or no?
Well, if it's sunny, yeah.
Good advice. The best advice you've given me. But yeah, give us a shout if you need a suit to be worn at Derby Day or Barbie Day. I'll be happy to do that.
Nothing worse than those tossers when it's not sunny and they're walking around with their... You know why people do that?
Why is that?
Because they're just covering what is not that nice.
Is it? Is that
so
right?
They just keep the sunnies on all day. They walk through the marquees and they got the sunnies on. When you're in the marquee, take your sunny off.
What about old mate that always has them on his head, even when it's night time? Yeah, what's his name?
He's a tosser too.
Yeah, what's his name, that fella? Australia's
Alex
top
Perry.
Model. That's your man.
Oh, no,
Mike.
Not him. I meant people
that
do
that. Oh,
right.
Well, you've given him a whack as well. Hello to Alex, big listener of the show. Now, Ducko, the trade period. Who won? Who lost?
Oh, look, there was a standout. I don't think there's ever really probably any losers. Probably Adelaide, if you're saying you lost one of the very best players of the competition in Paddy Dangerfield, is probably a bit of a loser in it all. But I think Geelong clearly were the best in the trade period.
It's a big turnaround, isn't it? Because their premierships were built on drafting and now they're going down the Hawthorn model, for want of a better term, of picking up experienced players.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say that. Did you know more than half of the players in this trade period were contracted players? So everyone keeps talking about free agency and what sort of impact that's having. Hey, the clubs, don't worry about that. They're getting rid of contracted players wanting to leave. So don't worry about just this free agency thing.
I was at a breakfast this week with our good friends at NAB, and Stephen Hocking from the Geelong Footy Club was there, and Craig Kelly, who manages a lot of people with ESP TLA, and Paddy Dangerfield was there, and he spoke very openly. I'm not giving away trade secrets or state secrets, but he basically said he spent a bit of time early on in the season at home, and he decided in his own mind that he thought, yep, he wanted to come home, and he was going to come back to Geelong. And then everything happened with Phil Walsh, and he said then he really questioned himself, and he understood the importance of a community and a football club and what it provided, and he said that became the really tough decision for him, because then he felt swayed back to the Adelaide Football Club to help them through what they were going through. And you know, you look at Paddy Dangerfield, he wants to come home, spend time with his family. He spent 8 magnificent years at the Adelaide Footy Club. Good luck to him.
Totally agree with everything you just said. Paddy Dangerfield, obviously Geelong, obviously Lachie Henderson, and also Zach Smith and Scott Selwood. So that alone, I think, is fantastic. I thought Collingwood...
Are they a top four team now?
Look, I think they were on the cusp. They lost a lot of games by small margins last week. They can make the top four. I have no doubt about that. I think Collingwood did well, obviously. Treloar, Aish, I'm not convinced Aish is a great player, but clearly he had a poor year. But from what I understand, lovely young man, and the sorts of things, obviously this hanging over his head, would affect him. Clearly it did. And obviously Jeremy Howe. So there's three pretty exciting players.
Jeremy Howe, the new Isaac Smith / Jack Gunston.
Absolutely. I think he's a very good player. By the way, he's gone to Collingwood for unders what he could have gone to any other club. So he's not a mercenary for all those people that thought that's exactly what he was about. That's not what he's about. So well done to the Pies.
Well, he did say in his presser that, in a way, it was critical of Melbourne. Well,
wasn't the presser, by the way, just on Collingwood, how good was the presser the way they set it up? Welcome, Jeremy Howe, the top of the board, the sponsors board at the back. It was just done so professionally.
It was a touch better than the welcome they did to Adam Treloar before he'd signed with the football club. But anyway, that's another story. I thought it was really interesting what Howe said about the fact that he wanted to go to Collingwood because he was promised one position he would play and he'd be sticking to that one position. I took that as a bit of a slight to Melbourne, that he felt that he'd been moved around in too many positions to settle himself.
Might be an excuse too. So you've got to be a little bit... It has to be a little bit of a concern. I'll tell you what else I like. Now, not because of the players they picked up. Mm. I like what Carlton have done. I like the fact that...
100%.
So Soss has gone about getting young players from GWS, clearly that he
not
knows.
Not the Carlton way.
Now, they're not spot on. They've done the complete opposite to what they would normally do. So they're building a side around youngsters, kept their draft picks. So they've now got... What, 1, 11, 19, 59, 69, 113. They are, seriously, they're doing the right thing. They're building.
One question for you. Are you worried, if you're Leon Cameron at GWS, that your young blokes want to go home? Treloar's left. They've had blokes leave. And McCarthy said, I haven't gone this year. I'm going to leave next year. It's a tricky situation. What do you do with McCarthy next year now?
Don't want to say I told you so. But I've said it. And it's not a blight on the footy club or where they're at.
Of course it's not.
They will play... probably play finals footy next year.
All right, do you do with McCarthy?
You've got to play your best team. You've got to get above. You've got to go outside yourself. And so does a footy club and as an individual. Like I said, rugby goes through this all the time. He may change his tune. If they play finals footy and he has a really good year and kicks 55
goals.
And surely
that's the approach GWS have to take.
That's right. And that's exactly what, that's how both parties have to take it. But I think GWS was a mistake. I think Gold Coast was a mistake, and I think they'll be propping those two sides up for the rest of
the... I'm not sure why
eternity.
Hyphen's winding us up. We haven't got a Saturday rub to go to. People will be happy, Hyphe, to listen to the Dead Set Legends till 3:30 this afternoon, mate. Hyphe. I don't know why you're giving us the wrap-up all of a sudden.
I'm starting to fall asleep. We've got to get to a break.
Listening to this quality radio, give us a spell, Hyphe. Next, we'll give away the lawnmower and the joke-off. Dead Set Legends.
Lawnmower.
Come on, Hyphe.
Victor.
Triple M.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast for Harvey Norman, your cooling specialist, with all the leading brands and products to help you beat the heat this summer.